Edinburgh. It's so good. Ah, so nice to be with you. We are in our third week of building the city, and I'm going to flip the whole service on its head. We're going to do everything backwards, but just a quick recap. In the first week, we said a church that is flying in a city that's in a mess is a problem, because what's happened is the gospel that we received is not going out. There's a breakdown. We haven't understood it. And so we said in the first week, we said that because in the book of Nehemiah, the temple was working, but the city was broken, there was a breakdown of the gospel message. And as people, the gospel that we receive, we have to give out. So the first part was, you have to build the city. If you're a Christian, if you call yourself a Christian, you've got to take it seriously. You've got to be part of you. In the second week, we spoke about the people who build cities. We said they're not people who read the Word of God occasionally to get something out of it. They're people who study the Word of God until it gets something out of them. That was kind of the message in the second week. And today, we're going to talk about probably one of the most powerful prayers you could ever pray in your life, and that will shape pretty much everything inside of you. But before I dive into that, I want to just celebrate a few things, a few people. You know what? One of the things I love about our leadership team is Brent has adopted two little girls. Justy's just adopted a girl. Craig, who sits on our board, he's adopted a little boy. This church is actually full of people who adopt kids, which is arguably one of the top three greatest needs in our city. They're city builders. It's fantastic. I'm just going to boast for just a little while. We have this guy. He goes under the Instagram handle Rezoborg. I think we got a picture of some of his work. Have you seen like work like that? Like it's got a specific flavor. You'll see next to taxi ranks, he's got like, there's just paintings along the whole wall. Kind of in that kind of style. This guy, he goes to our Kloof Church. And he said to me the other day, he said, Russ, I really need to do some artwork in Florida Road. I did a little bit next to Afro's, but I want to do some more. Because where I do art, people's hearts get rekindled. Art, you know, picture paints 1,000 words. Art tells story, and it shifts heart. I work with a bunch of people who are currently lobbying to get millions put into Florida Road and a little bit in Windermere just to upgrade the area. There are just city builders all over the shop. It is fantastic. This church is full of them. You're probably sitting next to one. And they might just be a bit dormant. So today is to try and help them undormant. I could boast about my wife and how she cares for special needs. I could just go on and on and on. They're just city builders here. But one of those city builders you probably don't know, unless you live in the Durban North area and you're kind of connected in this space, is a lady, Vanessa. And I've got a little video of an interview I did with her. She is a city builder, and she's going to help you find something you can do in the city. So watch this, and then I'll preach a message.
I'm so excited. We've got Vanessa, who is a community member amidst a race association, really, just helping the city get better. And because we have so many UIPs and rates associations that are literally taking power back, I wanted us to, as a church, get on board with this and understand how the city can work better and we can play a role. Vanessa, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Speak to us a little bit about Etiquini and some of the good news stories.
Oh, I have so many, but I mean, they're wonderful. We've had people come out and rewire our electricity and steal it from everybody and do it for free. The bosses have called them in saying, we'll pay you overtime, and they've said, no, thank you very much. And the storm the other day, and all the trees fell over. Our residents were going out with chainsaws to cut, and the next thing we knew, Parks arrived, and they had great fun. The residents were doing it with them and packing the stuff away. There's such good people out there in Etiquini that really want to get stuck in and really want to help us.
Tell us, because so often residents get upset with people who are working overtime.
Yes.
And there's just a breakdown in communication. Talk to us about that.
So you can't really win. When they didn't have any limitations on their overtime, the residents were really angry because they were doing so much overtime. And then Etiquini put limits on overtime, And now the residents are really angry because they only get, I think it's 10 hours per week. So if it's not critical, they're not going to come out because they don't have any overtime. Yeah. And that's why they've started doing it for free. I mean, so many of them will just come out and help you because they understand, they feel your pain. So they're not, you see them working at night, they're not making a buck. Half of them are doing it for free in their own time because they know what you're going through.
And Vanessa, I mean, you're doing it for free.
Yes. You,
on behalf of a community of people, you're going, hey, how do we make Durban North, Brighton kind of area, how do we fix that and make it work? Have you built up great relationships with different...
I have tried to. Parks is a bit tricky. They tend to move around a lot, the guys, but they all know each other, so they're wonderful. Electricity is fantastic. We've got Metro from the northern region. Luke, he's wonderful. A building, Claire. So we've managed to build up a really good way of somebody phoning and saying, listen, I need help here, and we can do an email and get to the bottom of it straight away. So we've been very lucky. But again, we respect them.
Yes.
You know, respect goes a long way.
Yeah. Speak to us, because in all of these, this video and all the conversations, I'm trying to bring communities closer to Etiquette. Yeah. Speak to us about the responsibility of a person in the city to log faults, take pictures, make sure that Etiquette knows what's wrong, because there's nobody else doing that. So just speak to us about that.
I get a lot of frustrated residents. They'll say there's been a pothole there for 4 weeks and no one's come to fix it. And you go, give me the reference number. And they're like, no, but it's been like that for 4 weeks. And you go, well, you have to get a reference number. You have to log it. And there's so many ways to log it.
Give us a list of how.
There's the apps, both for Android and Apple. There's emails, so e-services. There's WhatsApp lines. I mean, there really is. Then, of course, you can phone and sit on hold for 20 minutes.
Speak to us about the app.
The app is fantastic. The app's the easiest thing in the world to do. So that street light, it doesn't work. You can just go onto the app. It'll give you, like, multiple choice, you know, and you go light pole, press light pole. You put the pole number in, you put the address, and you send. And you'll get a reference number and you'll be able to monitor while it's getting fixed and if it's been fixed. So say you're driving along, my Uber driver, fleet of Uber drivers that are forced to log onto my Wi-Fi when they drop me off and download that, they can go anywhere and log from wherever it is and monitor that it actually got fixed. They can geolocate. So if you've like don't know the address, you can actually pin it. And they'll know there's a water leak here or there's a pothole or whatever. It's the easiest thing in the world to do.
So because most people listening to this are going, yeah, but I tried it once nothing happened.
No, no.
And talk to us, because there are systems in place to make sure stuff happens.
Correct.
How does it work?
So when you log a fault on any of those mechanisms, you get a reference number. Yes, sometimes it takes a couple of hours to get a reference number. I appreciate that. But you'll see when you get the reference number, it'll say it'll be addressed between 12 and 24 hours. And that's their promise to you. So you then take control of the situation. You don't feel as helpless. You've logged this, you've now got it, and now you own it. And if they don't come and fix it, then you can escalate that. You've got the power to say, right, I'm going to go to customer service and say, what's happened with this? Or I'm going to go to my counsellor and say, I logged this. Why hasn't it been done? And you're empowering your counsellor. We won't talk ward committees as yet, but you've got a whole ward committee that can help you as well. So you're empowering them. You're empowering the city because they can actually make a difference. They can come out there and fix something they knew nothing about and they're not getting moaned at. And you're empowering yourself because you're making a change. And a small change, but if you make that change and your neighbour sees that it worked and the road sees that it worked and before you know it, everybody's doing it, imagine that.
I'm so excited about just these little steps, because as more and more people join rates associations and more community engagement with city grows, it can create an ecosystem where stuff starts to work again.
100%.
But we're taking some ownership.
It's exactly like SAPs. So with SAPs, you go and you log a crime and they give you a case number. They submit that to KZN or, I don't know, the country, whatever, and their staff numbers are dictated by how many crimes were reported in your area.
Yeah, so if you want a small police station, make sure you don't
log. Please don't, yeah. It drives us insane. Like it was just a cell phone. Go log it.
Yes.
Because it slowly starts going down.
Yes.
They start getting less and less people, and then the crime goes up and up and up. And it's exactly the same with the Tikwini. If you're not logging, how do they justify next year's budget? How do they sit there going, well, actually, we've got a lot of potholes. We need to give roads more money or whatever to help maintain it. They don't know because they're not being logged. So actually, you're not fighting them. You're helping them.
Yes. Brilliant.
Not that cool? Okay, I'm going to get into the Bible. But these kind of things, this is literally how you take a little step, help fix our city. Now, we are in Nehemiah, and I'm going to skip right through to the end of Nehemiah. Next week, Shane's going to do the middle, the whole middle. No, he's just going to do one section in the middle of Nehemiah. But let me try and give you a little heads up on the book, on what happens in between, right in the beginning where I start and the end. Nehemiah is arguably one of the greatest leaders that the Bible's produced. People study Nehemiah just to learn how to lead. The oak is a machine. He sneaks in. When he gets there, he looks at all the destruction. He makes notes, comes up with a plan. Then he starts preaching to people. And he tells them, we got to fix this thing. He recruits the entire city. And in the process, they start rebuilding the wall. They then get mocked, intimidated, threatened, lawyers' letters, like we could go on and on. They, at one stage, they are building, probably, it says, with a trowel in the hand and a sword in the other. I don't know if that's possible. I think that's metaphorical. I think they had a sword down there, and they were building with a trowel, and they were waiting in case someone came so they could grab the sword. That was the kind of vibe that was happening. It was hectic. And this oak single-mindedly takes on one problem after the next, after the next. He's unbelievable. It's a bit like that dude in El Salvador. Did anybody hear about that oak in El Salvador, the president? Oh, no. This oak. Where's he? I came across him this last weekend. Show me this oak. What's his name? Nayib Bukele. He got into El Salvador. There was, like, I think there was 107 murders per 100,000 people. Like, it was competing with South Africa. And El Salvador was a mess. The gangs were driving everything. This guy comes into power. The first thing he does is he takes on all the gangs. He chucks people with tattoos into prison. He builds new prisons. They have a 1.07% of their population in prison. That's what he does. He goes in, just smokes everything. Then the criminals decide, no, we're going to strike back. So they cause a whole lot of mayhem in 2022 or something. He goes, is it? Goes straight into the prison system and says, do you want to eat again? The crime rate drops down significantly every year on year on year from 107 all the way down to 2.8 people per 100,000 people. Like, just takes hold of it. He's a Christian ex-Palestinian guy who's come to El Salvador to fix it. Nehemiah's like this. I do not take any from anyone. We're going to do what God called us to do, kind of guy. And so he goes, he rebuilds this thing. I mean, honestly, if you haven't read the book, really want to read the book of Nehemiah. And then what happens is after he's rebuilt the city wall, it takes him 52 days, he basically organizes first the outside, then the inside. So there's a whole bunch of rich people taking advantage of poor people. He sorts that out. There's a whole bunch of abuse happening, racial stuff, all kinds of stuff. He sorts that out. He brings the priest in. The guys have to sit and listen to the law. They preach all day, and everybody is weeping by the end of it. Imagine I preached all day. You would all be weeping by the end of it. That's what happens because they're so convicted of their sin. because they haven't been living according to the law. They haven't really read it. They don't really know it. And so they're weeping. And he says, don't weep, because now at least you've got the law. We can start somewhere. And they start changing their lives. He gets worship happening again. He gets tithing happening again. He sorts out the city, start to finish. They're starting to rebuild. And then he goes back to be a cupbearer. Imagine, you've just fixed a whole city. Then you go back to Babylon, pouring glasses of wine, drinking, make sure they're not poisonous. Here, king, you can... Like, that's from here to here. Goes back for 12 years. And then he hears it's not going well again in Jerusalem. Now, can you imagine? You have sacrificed so much, and the Muppets back there are messing it up. And so he asks the king again, can I go back? And the king goes, you've been so faithful at pouring my wine, drinking it, making sure I don't die. Off you go. He goes back. When he gets there, he sees a whole bunch of stuff. One, the high priest has put one of his relatives into the place where the tithes go to live. So the dude's siphoning. Corruption's back. And then what happens is people stop tithing because the church is corrupt, basically. And so worship stops. So he gets in there. I love it. He evicts the oak. Like, there's no squatter's rights there. He just takes him, hauls him, all his stuff, out you go. High priest, you fired your son. You married another chick who's not from Israel, out. He just goes mental. He just starts boxing people. He goes, what's that dude's name? He goes, like that dude. He just starts taking hold of one thing after another and smashing people. Then he starts dealing with a few problems. And I'm going to go from verse 12. It says, after he's sorted out this high priest, all Judah brought the tithes of grain, new wine, and olive oil into the storerooms. Then he says, I put Shelemiah the priest, Zadok the scribe, and a Levite named Pedaiah in charge of the storeroom, and made Hanan, son of Zakur, the son of Mattaniah, their assistant, because they were considered trustworthy. They were made responsible for distributing the supplies to their fellow Levites. Now listen to these words. Remember me for this, my God, and do not blot out what I have so faithfully done for the house of my God and its servants. If there is one prayer that you want to make part of your life, it is this one prayer. Remember me, O God. See, when you say remember in English, what people think is, let's go through the files. What's her name again? Like, that's how we remember. But when God remembers, it's this word, zachar. Just say that, zachar. You English people. What he's talking about is a remembrance that does. It's God moving his focus onto something. It's not like God's forgotten the person. It's that he's asking God to shift not just his mind, but his hands. The word zachar, it means to remember and act upon. Remember me, O God. Now let me tell you why this is so, so important. When God remembered Noah, the Bible said zachar. When he zachared Noah, he made a wind blow over the earth and the water subsided. When he remembered Abraham, he saved his nephew Lot from Sodom and Gomorrah. When he remembered Rachel, she fell pregnant. When the Israelites were in slavery, it says God remembered them and the promise he'd made to Abraham. We could go on and on. He zachared Hannah, Hagar and her son. Hezekiah gave him 15 more years of life. David prayed this prayer, Lord, remember me again and again and again every time he got into trouble. You remember Samson, the power guy? He said this just before he broke those temples. He said, God, remember me and use me one more time. This prayer, remember me, is said again and again and again in Scripture by people who have been used powerfully by God. You want to be praying, Lord, remember me. remember me. Now, here's the context to Nehemiah praying this prayer. And this morning, I'm probably preaching more to Christians than to people who are like exploring faith. But understand that with Nehemiah, when he got to Jerusalem, the first thing he did was he took everything the king had given him and shared it. The food or the perks. Now you must understand, the dude is a domestic worker back in Babylon. He could have, like, everybody else did this. They snuck a bit on the side so that they were set up for retirement. He could have done that legally. In fact, it would have been expected that he did that. But he doesn't. He takes all the food, every single ounce of provision, and he gives it away. He just sacrifices. So when this guy says, Lord, remember me, he's making a statement that it's a whole lot more than just, God, please come help me out. Here's what he's saying. He's going, God, I've made my life about you. Will you take care of me? You see, here's why this is so important. It's such a different way of thinking. When I speak to most people who are leaving, a lot of why they're leaving is they got a job that pays more. We make economic decisions because we live in this consumeristic culture that influences a lot of our brain. And so what happens is that it goes right into the core of us. So you'll hear people say stuff like that, like this. I left that job because I'm worth more. You heard that? You said that? Here's the thinking. My intrinsic value is related to my paycheck. So here's the thing. I had a funny conversation with a guy. He was properly sharp. I said to him, if you keep making decisions based on how you get paid, how can God send you anywhere? How can he place you? To which he said to me, he just has to pay me more where he wants me to go. Very funny. And very unusable. You see, there are two things that God doesn't really play with. You either choose mammon or him. And he will test you on this. And so I have so many conversations with young people who are literally going, shall I go from there to there because they'll pay me more? And if we were to flip it on its head, and really think kingdom-wise, which might for some of you be so out there that it's just weird. But the kingdom thinking is that your real job is to be a missionary where God's placed you. And your salary is just funding for the mission. And therefore, your real prayer will be, God, place me wherever you want me. And just please make sure that you fund me enough to get this mission done. You want to know why the church is struggling to get young people into ministry? You want to know why a lot of our kids will never really be on fire going, Lord, send me, do whatever you want? Because the consumeristic culture that has ripped itself around our hearts. And Nehemiah lives the opposite of that because he goes, I'm not going to ask the world to remember me. I'm not going to ask the world to take care of me. I'm going, God, you remember me. You take care of me. This is the first part of it. Now, it's going to get worse, just so you know. But it's good for you. It's like vitamins or broccoli. It says in verse 15, in those days, I saw people in Judah treading wine presses on the Sabbath and bringing in grain and loading it on donkeys together with wine grapes, figs, and all other kinds of loads. And they were bringing all this into Jerusalem on the Sabbath. Therefore, I warned them against selling food on that day. People from Tyre who lived in Jerusalem were bringing in fish and all kinds of merchandise and selling them in Jerusalem on the Sabbath to the people of Judah. So I rebuked the nobles of Judah and said to them, what is this wicked thing you're doing? You're desecrating the Sabbath day. Didn't your ancestors do the same things so that our God brought all this calamity on us and on the city? Now you're stirring up more wrath against Israel by desecrating the Sabbath. Now, we're not under the Old Testament. You are not desecrating the Sabbath by not taking out all of Friday or Saturday to spend with God. We are in a new covenant. But the principle hasn't changed. The principle is this. Why were they breaking the Sabbath? So they could make money. This is what was going on. They were going, if I don't trade on this one day, God has to provide. If I trade on this one day, turkey looks good. So they kept trading. The principle's the same. So Nehemiah comes in and he Chuck Norris's them. He just goes, doors closed. Hey, you're trading. I will smash you. Go away. Like he takes care. Here's why. Because what you tolerate in your life will dominate your life. And so he's going, I am not going to tolerate this stuff. I'm going to take it on. I'm going to beat it out of here. I'm going to reshape this place. Now, I think he was angry. I think he came back angry and he's just going for it. Because he's dealing with one problem after the next. Now we're going to shoot down to verse 19. He says, when the shadows fell on the gates of Jerusalem before the Sabbath, I ordered the doors to be shut and not opened until the Sabbath was over. He's Chuck Norrising this. I stationed some of my own men at the gates so that no load could be brought in on the Sabbath day. I'm going to speak properly just now. Once or twice, the merchants and sellers of all kinds of goods spent the night outside Jerusalem, but I warned them and said, why do you spend the night by the wall? If you do this again, I'll arrest you. I just love the soak. Then I commanded the Levites to purify themselves and go and guard the gates in order to keep the Sabbath day holy. And then he says this, remember me for this also, my God, and show mercy to me according to your great love. You know what I love about this prayer? He prays, remember me, 6 times. But this time he says, remember me according to your great love, not my great works. It's you got to get the heartbeat of this. He's not going, God, you owe me. He's going, because you are so gracious, please put your face on me. Please look my way. And notice what he asks for. He says, show mercy to me, not give me a reward. I want to just backtrack again, because in verse 14, so this is verse 22. Verse 14, he says, remember me for this, my God, and do not blot out what I have so faithfully done for the house of my God and its service. Remember me, put your grace all over me. Please look after me, be merciful to me. Then he says, and don't blot out the work I've done. You know, when we first come to God, mostly we come to God because life's a mess. I blew this, I got fired, she broke up with me. Like, if we're really honest, most people come to God in a really rough season. And they go, because I tried to get out and I couldn't. How many of you came to God like that? There we go. Exactly. But then what starts to happen is God gives you the girlfriend, or he gives you the job, or he sorts you out. He helps you out. And what's so beautiful about Christianity is you wake up one day, and one day you realize, I am more concerned about building his kingdom than I am about the stuff. It is the most beautiful day of your life. when you can pray like he prayed. Lord, just don't blot out the work that I've done for your kingdom. Like everything else, don't worry about that, Lord. But your kingdom, I want it to... You see what's happened? He's sought first the kingdom until the kingdom has grabbed hold of his heart. Now, all he's thinking about is the kingdom. When that happens in your heart, man, you are in a beautiful place. Because now you're living seeking first the kingdom. And God is living going, how can I care for your needs? It's a beautiful dance. You want to get to that place, the place that Nehemiah's got to. But it goes on and it says, moreover, in those days I saw men of Judah who had married women from Ashdod. The listeners, don't marry women from Ashdod. Ammon and Moab. Half of their children spoke the language of Ashdod, or the language of one of their peoples, and did not know how to speak the language of Judah. Here's what he's saying. The guys knew that they were doing wrong. Because in chapter 10, verse 30, it says that they made an oath not to marry women outside of Israel. They were going to, Christians were going to marry Christians. That was what was going on here. But here's what happens. They go, yo, but have you seen that chick, bro? But he's so cute. And within seconds, they're hooking up. Now, here's the problem. Because lots of people ask me, what about dating non-Christians? And I'm all for flirt to convert. But there's a problem. I am joking. I'm just playing. This has been live streamed, baby. Stick with me. The problem is when your kids grow up not knowing the language of the Bible. You see, what's happening is they can't speak Hebrew. And if you can't speak Hebrew, you can't learn the scriptures which are in Hebrew. And so now what you're getting is a breakdown of the dream that God had for your life, which is that your family would be based on Christian principles and your kids would grow up in that and you would teach them the ways of the Lord so that they could teach others the ways of the Lord. And in that environment, you would have a people who were wrapped around God at the center. And so Nehemiah goes jolly hockey sticks on them and it says, I rebuked them, called down curses on them, beat some of the men, pulled out their hair. I made them take an oath in God's name and said, you are not to give your daughters in marriage to their sons, nor are you to take their daughters in marriage for your sons or for yourselves. Was it not because, now here's where he's getting to the heart. Was it not because of marriages like these that Solomon, king of Israel, sinned? Among the many nations, there was no king like him. He was loved by his God, and God made him king over all Israel, but even he was led into sin by foreign women. Must we hear now that you too are doing all this terrible wickedness and are being unfaithful to our God by marrying foreign women? One of the sons of Joiada, son of Eliashab, the high priest, was son-in-law of Sanballat the Horonite, and so I drove him away. Remember them, my God, because they defiled the priestly office and the covenant of the priesthood and of the Levites. This is a hectic prayer. Remember them. I don't think he was thinking, remember them, be nice to them, Lord. He was angry. And he was doing what you have to do when you're angry. He was going, God, I can't deal with this. Will you deal with it? You see, part of what makes my kids safe is that when one of them hits the other, they can come to dad for justice as opposed to deal with it themselves, which they often do, for vengeance. The concept is that when you get very hurt, you come to the father for justice instead of taking your matters into your own hands for vengeance. Now, Nehemiah, I mean, there's actually no sin. He didn't commit a single sin in the book. Nehemiah is seen as a type of Jesus. He lived to do God's work. He rebuilt the city. He sacrificed himself in so many different ways, risked his life. He is like Jesus in that Jesus once walked into a temple, and it didn't say that he pulled anyone's hair out, but he made a whip. He kicked some tables over. He must have beat some animals. Sorry, greenies. They must have run out. People would have been knocked over. Jesus was mad. But Jesus prays a different prayer. See, when Nehemiah says, "Remember them, O God, I want justice," Jesus says, "Lord, please forgive them. They don't know what they're doing." When Nehemiah's going, "Blot them out," Jesus is going, "Father, remember their sins no more. Move them as far as the east is from the west." Because here's the thing about Jesus, and this has to be the thing about us. Jesus knows that you will not transform a city by beating people's hearts into righteousness. The only way you're going to build a city is by saving people from unrighteousness. And the only one who can do that is Jesus. And so Jesus begins a revolution. You know, what I love so much about Nehemiah is he prays this prayer, "Remember me, remember me, remember me." In fact, the last verse of Nehemiah is, "Remember me with favor, O God." And I can imagine what's going through Nehemiah's mind. He's going, if I left for 12 years and they duffed it, how long before they completely mess this whole thing up again? How much control can I have? And so he prays, please God, don't let them duff it. Remember me. Be on me. Make sure this works. If Nehemiah had known that the condition of the heart was the thing that's the biggest problem, he would have prayed a different prayer, but he didn't understand it. Like so many of us today, we just want to, that president, just beat them, arrest them, sort them out, and starve them. Like that's how so many of us want to do this thing. But Jesus' way is so different. He goes, forgive them. Serve them. Build with him. Nehemiah's prayer, in some ways, you could say, failed. He said, Lord, remember me and do not blot out the work I've begun. But it took a few, maybe 20 years, and Israel became a mess again. They didn't worship other gods, but they started worshiping money. Corruption came in. It got messy. And you could look at it and go, God didn't remember. Or you could look at it a different way and go, Nehemiah has been studied by potentially billions of Christians. Millions of leaders over thousands of years have given themselves to rebuilding cities because of the book of Nehemiah. I'm one of them. Nehemiah, his life has so impacted this world that literally, if there was no book of Nehemiah, taking care and rebuilding cities would probably not be a thing in Christian mindsets. One day, when God is walking with Nehemiah in the New Jerusalem, he'll be walking along and he'll say, Nehemiah, this is what you were trying to build. You couldn't do it because you couldn't fix hearts, but man, you did a good job. Sorry, ocean coming down. Surfers have this problem. Ocean comes out of our nose from time to time. He'd be walking with Nehemiah and he'd go, Nehemiah, you see those oaks over there? Because of your work, those guys started to rebuild a city. And he'd be walking past and he'd say, you see that like mixed up group, don't really know what they are, like all different colors and stuff. You know those oaks? You see them over there with that weird leader? That oak read your book. Again and again and again until he started to get a picture of what his life could be about. And then he started planting churches just to get the heartbeat in of build your city. Because of you, Nehemiah. You see, God answered that prayer so beautifully. He remembered him. Now, let me tell you why it's so important that you pray this prayer. Because when you start to pray, Lord, remember me, you stop thinking about how to be comfortable and make more money. And you start thinking about how I can make a difference. And when you start to pray this prayer, Lord, remember me, you start to realize that life is not for this moment. You know, I've done two funerals already. I just need two people who are prepared to take this rope in two different directions. Please can two people run up here and thank you. Will you check that pin there, love? Oh, it's going to be one of those ropes. Ah, beautiful. Can you guys disappear into the hamadulas? Oh, I'll just hold it like this. I do these funerals the whole time now. Two weeks ago, and just hide there. Tell you when you can come out. You know, the thing about a funeral is that, and I'm doing a particularly tragic one next Friday. But the thing about a funeral is that it is utterly devastating if it is not put into the context of eternity. Because losing someone, if that's all life is utter death. But when we believe the Bible, what we believe is that your lifespan in the context of eternity is this. I know you can't see that. One line. That's how long your life is in the context of eternity. And here's what you start to understand and rethink when you understand that your life is a dot on the map of eternity. You start to realize that if all I live for is for today, this life sucks in this life. Because what you do here, as Braveheart whoever said, echoes in eternity. Jesus says it this way. He tells this illustration. He says, the dude who looked after five miners got five cities. What's the concept? You're training now for eternity. You're setting yourself up for eternity. When you start to pray this prayer, Lord, remember me, what you're actually starting to do is you're starting to go, instead of thinking, there's some investors here, how well does it go for people who think short term? Very badly. Some people think lifespan, better. People who think eternity, those are the people who make good decisions. Friends, the reason you want to be praying this prayer, remember me, O God, is because you want to put your life in the picture of all eternity so that you don't waste it. And the greatest way you can do that is build your city so that you'll be salt and light, so that you'll get to tell some person who goes, why are you picking up my rubbish? Why are you cleaning my verge? Why are you logging my fault? You can go, man, you may not believe this, but Jesus utterly transformed my life. Can I tell you something about him? And you might just get to invite someone to the God who remembers your sin no more. That is the point of this life. I've got nothing more. Amen. Let's stand. Why don't you just put out your hands like this? Jesus, I thank you that you have moved my sin as far as the east is from the west. And now as I go out this week, remember me and help me to build your kingdom in the city. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. Have a great day. If you haven't logged up, please log up.